studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about environmental issues and sustainability. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Habitat for Humanity constructs thousands of homes each year across the U.S., but few have been constructed like the one recently completed on Marsac Avenue.
That's right. This home was built with energy efficiency in mind, including its lighting, insulation, appliances, and building materials.
Jeff Heim is from Rocky Mountain Power, and Lisa Schneider from Habitat for Humanity will join us in the first part of the show to discuss this Watt Smart home, its features, energy savings, and what makes it different from other Habitat homes.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Inza Riepen of Recycle Utah. She'll tell us about their ski gear recycling program and what happens to that gear after it's dropped off at the center. We'll also ask her about recycling holiday Christmas lights and other holiday stuff.
Perfect.
Technical term.
Exactly. All of that and some news about the U.S. recently approving a pipeline carrying petroleum liquids into Canada, why that's happening, and what it might mean with respect to the proposed XL pipeline, which, by the way, is already pumping oil. We'll explain.
Details on these stories later in the show. Of course, you can join in on today's discussion by posting your questions and your comments to our Facebook page, KPCW This Green Earth.
The environment and our connections to it, that's This Green Earth. It all gets started right after these words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
I'm John Wells.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peake.
Join us for Cool Science Radio, Thursdays at 9 a.m.
From the discovery of new dinosaurs to the science of an avalanche.
From the secret technology behind Facebook to nanotechnology.
Deciphering science and tech in an entertaining, amusing, and accessible way.
It's Cool Science Radio. If we understand it, so can you.
Thursdays at 9 a.m., only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Brought to you by Peak Art and Frame. In the cycle of life, we all go through changes, and menopause is one of them. At Intermountain Park City Specialty Clinic, our OBGYNs, Drs. Janine Falk and Lorraine Sabella, care for women at all stages of life. 435-658-7400. Intermountain Healthcare is a nonprofit organization.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Welcome to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak. She's Nell Larson. And our first topic is about Habitat for Humanity and the home that they are recently constructed here in town and are wrapping up. We'll get to details on that shortly. We have Lisa Schneider. She's the executive director of Summit and Wasatch Counties Habitat for Humanity. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Chris.
And we also have Jeff Hymus. He is with Rocky Mountain Power, and Jeff's here to talk about the Watt Smart aspect of this home. Thanks for joining us, Jeff.
I'm glad to be here.
Let's start with you, Lisa. Let's talk a little bit about the home itself, how it came to be, why it is, where it is, and et cetera. You know, to just give us a little background on it.
Sure. We'll just go back to the beginning. Park City Municipal acquired the land. It was owned by the Pechnik family. And my understanding is Park City really saw this as an opportunity to do infill affordable housing, workforce housing. I think most people who've been around here for any length of time really have a pretty good understanding of the challenges the community faces around affordable housing. And maybe there's some misconceptions out there. What does affordable housing look like?
Right.
what does it look like? So the city approached Habitat for Humanity several years. It's probably been 6 years ago, maybe 7 years ago.
Wow.
And said, you know, would you be interested in developing this lot? And Habitat said yes. It was before my time. I've been with the affiliate for 3.5 years now. And Habitat took this on and really looked at it and said, wow, this is not your typical Habitat build. It's not going to be slab on grade. it's a vertical build. It's a three-story building because of the nature of the site. We looked at that. We looked at a lot of the other aspects of, you know, where it's located. It's walking distance to town. It's on a bus line. It's also on land that originally sat right next to a historic railroad grade for mining. So the soils there are contaminated. And we looked at this whole situation and said, you know, what if we could not only build affordably for the buyers of these homes, but build it so that the operational cost would be lower? So we said yes to the city. Yes, and thank you so much for the opportunity to do this. The city donated the land to Habitat, and we made a commitment. Let's build this green. And what does that mean? How can we do that?
Right.
I approached Alan Agle early in the process and said, Alan, what if we could build green? What could we do? And he said, well, if you could build green, we could go for LEED. That's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design.
Right.
And we could go Energy Star. And the operating cost for the homeowners is going to be so much lower. It's going to have a great impact for, you know, the way you're using materials. You're going to have less waste. We can do a Xeriscape landscaping, which is much healthier for in terms of, you know, we're keeping the water, any kind of water that comes down the hill stays on the land, for example. So we looked at the whole picture and said, this just makes sense. It's not that much more expensive to do. Let's do it.
Okay. And we'll get into the differences in cost in a little bit. But well, starting from, like you say, the land itself had some challenges, environmental challenges. You know, basically it was on old mine tailings, like most of this town is. Mm-hmm. So you had to deal with that. And that's an additional time and effort and cost.
It was.
In handling that soil that had a high lead levels.
Very high. We joked about that. We said, geez, if we could, you know, smelter this lead, we might make some money
make
off
a
of
profit.
This.
But yeah.
Unfortunately, that didn't pan out. But
but it didn't stop the project.
It didn't stop. We were very committed to this working. And I think a lot of the credit really goes to the city and to people in the community who got behind this project and to sponsors like Rocky Mountain Power. I mean, we are a community-based housing solution.
Right.
What we do happens when community rallies around it happening. And so, you know, we were able to overcome the soils issue. It put us thousands and let me just say tens of thousands of dollars over budget. But we overcame that, and we've been able to do this and still build a home that's the per square foot cost in these homes is between $133 to $148 a foot.
Mm-hmm.
And the doing it green, getting the LEED certification and going Energy Star is really only about $2 a foot to do. So the long-term impact of that for the homeowners is you know, tremendous energy savings every month. And the way I look at that is that those are dollars that go toward college savings plans. Those are dollars that improve nutrition for a family.
Right.
Those are dollars that help a family save for retirement. So we Habitat, that's what we do. That's what we do best. We work with families to help them succeed in building a life.
Perfect.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about Rocky Mountain Power's role in this house, and have you done a partnership like this before?
Well, this is kind of a different partnership than what we usually do. This is through our Watt Smart New Homes program, and what that is, a lot of people are familiar with our energy efficiency programs and incentives that help residential customers and business customers save energy and money. But with WattSmart New Homes, we actually offer incentives to home builders who want to build green and energy efficient. So what we did here with Habitat is our WattSmart New Homes program provided $25,000 in a sponsorship to help make sure that this home here in Park City was built up to high energy efficiency standards. And as a result, we're also getting that message out to others and to people who are going to build a home or to home builders that, hey, you want to build WattSmart? It may not cost as much as you think to make these upfront investments that are going to result in long-term energy and dollar savings.
So, Lisa, is this a trend that's happening, you know, across the country through Habitat? Is Habitat starting to look at green and sustainable homes?
Absolutely, it is. And when you look around the country, especially in environments like our mountain town communities, if you look at Vail, Colorado, that affiliate has been building green for years. In fact, all of the homes they build are Energy Star and LEED certified homes. Other mountain town communities are doing the same. Habitat International made a commitment that by 2013, all affiliates would be building to Energy Star standards. So I can't tell you that every affiliate is doing that, but that is the commitment that's being made. It just makes sense.
Sure. From an environmental and economic sense, economic point of view. And the home is beautiful. I mean, it's on the corner basically of Marsac and Ontario there. It's a beautiful home, and I'll admit it is not what I typically envision as a typical Habitat home.
And can you tell the difference between the Habitat homes and any other homes that are in the community?
Not at all. Well done. But let's go back to the WattSmart thing. So what makes a home WattSmart in terms of materials or...
And there's a lot of different things, and that's one of the
operations.
That's one of the good things with this program is that builders have options of how they want to build at WattSmart. It isn't just one thing. It could be energy efficient lighting using compact fluorescent bulbs instead of regular incandescents. It could be making sure you have enough caulking, enough weather stripping, the sort of things to keep the warm air from going outside in the winter and the cool air from escaping in the summer. So there's a lot of different things you can do. And like Lisa mentioned, a lot of these things don't really cost very much. But this incentive that we provide helps builders to really say, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to take that extra step. I'm going to build energy efficient. And then it benefits the homeowners in the long run.
Right. Now, not to say that you're offering $25,000 for all future builders. Let's be clear about that.
Good point. Yeah, okay. The incentives range.
WattSmart does not include $25,000.
Right, but you can get hundreds or even possibly thousands of dollars back on the cost of your projects. And the great thing about building energy efficient is it's going to make your home more comfortable and affordable, and so it's good for everybody.
Well, we'll get to that in a minute because I was there for the testing yesterday of the home, how tight the home was, and we'll talk about the results to that. If you just join us, we're speaking with Lisa Schneider. She is the executive director for Summit and Wasatch County's Habitat for Humanity, and Jeff Hymas. He's with Rocky Mountain Power, and we're talking about Habitat's new home here over on Marsac Avenue. What's the size of the home?
So yesterday I misspoke. It's actually 1,600 feet.
1,600 square feet.
And that includes the garage space. There's no parking up there to speak of, so we had to build a garage normally for Habitat. We don't do garages, but in this case, it made sense. So the living space is very modest. It's a three-bedroom home. It's a one-and-a-half bath. The kitchen, it's kind of the great room design with the kitchen and the living room connected. All three bedrooms are on the third floor. Mm-hmm. So it's a simple, decent home. You mentioned this, the lighting in there, and it's Alan Eagle brought this up yesterday when we were going through some of the energy aspects of the home, and we're using all compact fluorescent and LED lighting in there, and it's just that one simple thing will save our homeowners about $25 a month on their power bill because of the choice.
$300 a year. $300 a year that goes to other things.
That's exactly right.
Perfect. Right.
So what else is different about this home from other Habitat homes?
I want to speak to how we did the HVAC.
Yeah.
Because that one jumps out at me in a big way. part of our partnership with Rocky Mountain Power was we did a HVAC workshop. We brought in our contractor, Dan Dearden, and he spent 2 hours talking with local contractors about really good HVAC design. And my biggest two takeaways from that were this. You can have a great new high efficiency furnace, and it may not do you any good at all if your ductwork isn't done properly. And what he was really getting across to us is the design of the ductwork and how important that is, how well it is sealed, mm-hmm. and how well the air flows through the ductwork. So, for example, let's say you've got ductwork with squared off corners. You know, you end up creating these air pockets and reducing the airflow. So you're losing some efficiency that way. Mm-hmm. But if you do, you know, more rounded corners and you're careful about how your design is in the ductwork, you're increasing the efficiency of the furnace. So what happens is the more you make your furnace cycle on and off, the more you're working it.
Right.
And that can shorten the life of your furnace. So it was an interesting thing. I came away from it saying to myself, really, how many homeowners or home buyers ever really take a look at how well the ductwork is done, if it's sealed properly, if it's insulated, for example, if it's under your home, is it insulated? So there are a lot of factors in HVAC design that contribute to the energy efficiency of a home. And I read yesterday on the Rocky Mountain Power website, as I was just kind of going through and taking note of a few things to bring up this morning, that a leaky duct in your HVAC system can add 30% to the amount of energy your home uses in heating and cooling. That's a lot of money for homeowners.
That's yeah. hundreds of dollars just over the course of the winter. That can be right. that you're spending to basically heat the outdoors or to throw heat out of the home. Because yesterday they did a test. So they did a test of how well sealed the home is, basically. Mm-hmm. Jason Dittmer from Dwelltech was there, ran the test. Won't go into the details. But the results were that this house was, I think he said, at least three times more efficient in its heating and HVAC operations than a normal home, meaning it just had very few leakages of air.
I'm glad you brought that up because another very key aspect to that is how well you seal the house. So yeah. We talked about the HVAC system, and now let's talk about how you use caulking and spray foam. So one of the most fun days ever, if you want to come out and volunteer with Habitat, is spray foam day. So if you've never done this, it's absolutely hilarious to have 10 people on a construction site with cans of spray foam. Come out and join us sometime. You'll love it.
Okay.
We got in there with lots of spray foam, and then H. Ball McDaniel from Nexant, we work with Nexant, they are our green raider on this project, came in and he, with his eagle eye, looks around and says, oh no, we have more to do. I'll be right back. He comes back with three more cases of caulking. And he spent the rest of the day caulking every single seam, you know, any place that you could see where wood met wood in the construction of this home, he sealed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we insulated really well. Insulation's very important. So that, you know, very inexpensive to do.
Right.
Sealing your home.
So at times it's materials plus construction techniques that equals a more efficient home.
Absolutely.
And a few of the things you said kind of segue really well into a topic that Chris and I were talking about before the show, which is education, not only of the people constructing these homes, but the people assessing them and buying them so that everybody knows how to look for these green features. Did you find that, you know, people learned new techniques in building or, you know, opened their eyes to new materials during the construction of the house?
Absolutely. And here is here's what we had this amazing opportunity during the process. We partnered with the Salt Lake Community College Construction Trades program. And so it really became a living laboratory for green building sciences. The students came up. They were up on Tuesdays and Thursdays throughout their curriculum. And these two homes on Marsac became their curriculum. And they learned how to build green by, we use less lumber. We ordered very specifically how much lumber we needed for these homes. There was very little excess. Mm-hmm. They learned how to insulate. They learned how to build green, and now they're going to be taking those skills back out into their professions.
Right.
Fantastic. So if, unless you have another question for Lisa, I want to ask Jeff, what do you see as sort of the top things in the average home that are energy wasters, and also some of the easiest low-hanging fruit that people can address if they want to make their house more efficient?
Well, the biggest energy wasters really happen during the summertime because, you know, during the summer, about 50% of the energy people use in Utah is for cooling things, either air conditioning to cool people or refrigeration. So, you know, one thing we have is our refrigerator recycling program. If you have an old energy guzzling fridge in your basement or garage, get rid of it. We'll give you $30 and we'll recycle it. Now, during the winter, there are a lot of things people can do to save energy and money in their homes. One easy way is to set your thermostat to 68 degrees or lower, as long as you're still comfortable. And when you're out of the house, you can even lower that by a few more degrees.
So, quick question about that one. A question that we've gotten before is kind of, okay, does it make sense if you're only going to be gone for a few hours to let your house cool all the way down and then heat it back up when you come home?
Probably not if you're only going to be gone for a few hours, but if you're going to be gone working the whole day, it's better to lower it by a few degrees more and then raise it again when you get back.
I lower it. No. Few. No. I mean, I'm like down.
Chris and I are both living in ice boxes half the time.
That's why you're so
goal. It's a success. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But I only have a 1,200 square foot home either, so it's relatively easy, although very leaky, to get it back warm. But that's a good question. Get it. So there's a cutoff point. In monitoring or adjusting your thermostat, depending on how much time you're away.
Right. Another thing you can do is cover drafty windows with a heavy-duty clear plastic sheet in the window frames on the inside. Set your water heater to 120 degrees and drain your water heater annually. Wash your clothes in cold water and use full loads. Also, for your dishwasher, you want to run that at full capacity. And then switching to compact fluorescent lights or LEDs for your holiday lights. A lot of people are switching to LEDs, and over time that'll save some money.
So let's go back to the water heater. You mentioned, you know, setting it at 120 degrees. Mm-hmm. Okay, everybody knows you can lower that temperature, but you also said drain it every year.
Yeah, which people may not have heard of that before, but draining it, that'll, you know, help just clear it out there, and you're not wasting as much energy. So that's one I'm not quite sure of all the details on why that is. But hey, it's a good idea to do.
We'll do a little research on that.
Here's another thing that I do when I run my dishwasher.
I'm afraid to hear this.
No, this is wonderful. When I run my dishwasher, I don't let, you know, when it's done and it's just drying or so. It's just not, I open it up as soon as it's done, and there's just rush of hot, moist air. It's like a sauna.
Glorious.
Oh, my goodness.
Moisture.
It is. There is no better part of the day than to stand over the dishwasher and have this wonderful steam. Now, the other thing I've done to save a lot of energy is I turned off my hot tub, and I decommissioned it, basically. I drained it, and, you know, make sure, because I rarely used it, and I was spending. I'm telling you, I was spending close to $700 a year, I calculated, just heating my hot tub, just keeping my water moving and that, you know, water at 100 degrees. It is insane how much energy hot tubs use.
Oh, absolutely.
So if you're not using it, you know, run the numbers and consider just shutting it down.
That's your lift ticket for the
it is.
Ski season. I mean, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of wasted thousands of dollars over the years that I did not realize how much I was spending just to keep my hot tub water warm.
Well, how about this one? What about vampire power?
Absolutely. If you're, you know, not using your TV or after you're done charging your phone, you need to make sure you unplug that. You don't want to leave the things in, just wasting energy that you're not really using.
Right.
So even if something is off, and I think this is a common misconception, even if something is off, you've turned the TV off or the charger isn't plugged into your phone or it doesn't have a little indicator light, even just having it in the plug is pulling some energy.
Absolutely is.
Right, and that's why power strips are great. They have smart power strips that will even sense the use and automatically shut it off for you. So that's a great way to save.
All right, well, there's so much more we could do. We got to wrap up.
We could talk all day.
As usual, Lisa Schneider, Executive Director of Summit and Wasatch County's Habitat for Humanity, and Jeff Hymas, spokesperson for Rocky Mountain Power. Thanks so much for joining us. When is the home going to be occupied?
This weekend, I believe they'll start moving in.
Fantastic. For the holidays.
Yeah, just in time.
All right. Well, our next guest will be talking about holiday.
We will. We'll be talking about holiday consumption and holiday waste.
Perfect. Stick around for that. It's This Green Earth. We'll be back after some words from our underwriters. Stay tuned.
Park City Restore turns your donation of gently used home furnishings, construction materials, and furniture into affordable housing through Habitat for Humanity in Summit and Wasatch Counties. Check habitat-utah.org for a list of items accepted at the Restore during business hours, Wednesday through Saturday, 10 to 6. Restore is located in Silver Summit at 6280 Silver Creek Drive. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Yahoo! Powder days are on the way. Another holiday is fast approaching at Park City Nursery. We're happy to celebrate the season with KPCW, offering a selection of fresh, field-grown Christmas trees, handmade wreaths and garlands, decorations, candles, and gardening gifts. A continued family tradition since 1983. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson, here with Chris Cherniak, as always. And in the studio with us this morning is Inza Riepen, Director of Recycle Utah.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today, Inza.
Thanks for having me.
So we are going to start by talking about ski gear. Most of us in this town have way
skis,
too much of it.
Really?
And some of it gets discarded from time to time. And you have a program where this can be dropped at the center.
Indeed. We have a very unique waste stream in the county, and that consists of skis and poles and boots and goggles and helmets and snowboards and snow boots. And all of those I wish you could make fences and chairs and whatnots out of. And if you can, that's great. But when your neighbor is angry about the snow fence and you need to get rid of those skis, please bring them to Recycle Utah's drop-off center in Park City. So we want the skis to not go into the Summit County landfill. And before I came on, I called Jaron Scott and I said, "Hey, Jaron, how do you like skis in your landfill?" And he said, "What?" So our landfill does not want to see them because, as you can imagine, with the layers and layers of wonderful stuff that makes up a ski, it is never going to biodegrade, decompose. It just sits there. And while it might not do any harm, there might not be any leachage initially, over time there will be, and then it's, you know, our watershed. So
paints and glues and solvents that are used in manufacturing.
Yeah, you don't even want to know. There's no, you know, it's a great sport. It's our sport. We are all lucky to have it here as long as we have snow. But if it comes to getting rid of skis and especially boots, you know, we might be able to make fences out of skis. But what do you do with the boots? Yeah. So I came up with tip jars, flower pots. But after that, I'm a little out of, you know, ideas. So please, folks, if you have any of this equipment, we now have a year-round collection of these items, with emphasis before and after the resorts open, of course. So before the season starts and after the season closes, we see most of it. But we see a lot of folks coming, second homeowners coming in the summer, and they are cleaning out their garages, and bingo, there are the old skis. Mm. So if you do bring them to us, this is what's going to happen. We are working with SIA, that's Snow Sports Industry America in Denver. They have the first comprehensive, safe, and OSHA-certified facility to actually grind this material. The problem with grinding skis, cutting them, cracking them, whatever you want to do with them, is that it needs to have a very proper dust collection system. Skis are generating a lot of foam as you cut them. We tried it here 3 years ago when we started the program, and I had to stop it, even though my guys wore protective gear. It just wasn't good enough. It was a scary sight. It was like snow in July. So if you bring them to us, we will handle them. We will accept them. We will sort them according to category. We will then ship them to a consolidation point in Salt Lake. We have worked with numerous consolidation points, and that just means we here at Recycle Utah don't have enough space to store it all. It will go down to Salt Lake. It will then be combined into maybe a 40 or 53 footer and then be shipped to Fort Collins,
right,
where the company called Waste Not has this facility. The SIA got a grant from the state of Colorado, $400,000+ to buy this machine, this top grinder, basically. But that wasn't really the expensive stuff. It was the dust control system.
Right.
The safety mechanisms
in order to protect the people that actually work with this stuff.
So what is happening after this is ground up? I imagine you have this unusual product, for lack of a better term.
Yes.
What's happening with that?
Well, at the moment, the short end is nothing.
Okay.
There is a long story. We have two types of grinds that are the result of this. And yes, at this point, you can say, well, what sense does it make unless you have a product? Mm. So I still look at this as a pilot program. And please know that we here in Park City were the first to deliver a comprehensive collection and recycling program, not just in the state of Utah, but comprehensive, period. So in order to get something going, you have to have a certain mass of product sitting there before you go into production. So there is a 4x8 sheet of this material, which is about as solid as a ski, and it is going anywhere. Our dream is that all the signage on all the resorts forever will be made out of old skis. Is that feasible at this point? Well, not really. So we need more of the stuff in order to actually make something.
Okay.
The one thing I can tell you is that, you know, everybody has the idea of old skis turning into the base of a new ski. That is not going to happen. There are too many boots in there. So what you have is plastic and foam and a whole lot of metal. All of it can grind up. Top grinder can grind anything. But it's a nasty product, and we need to continue to explore options. Right now, my goal is to keep it out of the Summit County landfill, and please don't drop it off in Wasatch County either. We are scheduled to present to Ski Utah and hopefully let everybody know about the program we're running here in Park City so that every resort can do it. There's no reason that Bryanhead or Snow Basin or whoever should not do this. So we're asking everybody locally, please know that we're doing this. We're doing it every day. We're open every day, including Sundays, 10 to 4.
Wow.
So come and drop the stuff off. I know that you have it.
So if, you know that there are some old skis in every closet. If people have an interest in using some of these products, like that, you know, that you have at the center, the skis or the old boots or whatever, and repurposing those or using those for something else, is that something that you would provide?
You know, it's a really, really tough question. Come and talk to me. Do not bother my staff, please.
Because to Inza.
What we find is that people say, I want the snowboards. The snowboards are good. I'm going to make benches out of them, and I'm going to sell them for $750, which you can do, and more power to you. But would you please ask all of your friends for their snowboards first? Because the fine line is, who do we say yes to and who do we say no to? It is my concern is for safety. I don't want you to pick up a pair of skis out of our pile and then go ski on the mountain and break your neck. Whose fault is it? And unfortunately, we live in America and we have lots of lawyers that have lots of tools.
Very litigious.
So, yes, thank you. So we want to be very careful and cautious. I would like for you to consider, please, dropping off the stuff that is no good.
Right.
That
no
isn't
longer
good
usable.
For anything. Right. And I don't know if you sat in one of those ski chairs for a very long time. Not necessarily comfortable. They're cool.
Yes.
I think every porch in the county should have minimally four.
I'm with you on that.
Yes, there is a business opportunity in that. And of course, snowboards are way easier than skis. Yes, there's also a terrific use of, you know, not the alpine, the cross-country skis for shot glasses. I mean, mm-hmm. really cool looking. Mm-hmm.
Shot skis?
Yeah, shot skis. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that means, see, you don't even know about it. You would need three of them.
Need to get
now
out.
We know what you need for Christmas.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So the short end is, please don't throw them away. I did clarify with the county that if you were to stick them in your garbage can, yes, they would be picked up. And they would break in the truck because sure. everything gets compacted in the truck. And they would just sit in the Summit County landfill. The spotters cannot see skis. It's just too much. I was pleased to know that they pick out televisions. But, yeah, skis, right. No. So bring them to us any okay. day of the week.
Fantastic, Insa.
And it's free. It's free. Yeah. It's free. What I asked for. And I need to acknowledge the Sunrise Rotary Club, who gave us a grant, and the Powder Corporation and Vail Resorts. And thanks to Live Give PC, we now have a pot of gold sitting there. We need to find an industry-wide solution. And I have been working with a group of stakeholders from resorts to manufacturers to rental shops.
That's what I was thinking, rental shops. I mean, what do they do with
product? It's a very interesting industry. Okay. We are tier one. They sell it to tier two.
Okay.
And it goes down the
line.
Oh,
I see.
And therein lies, there are many challenges to address. And we're hoping to come forth a little bit more with more information. But if there's anybody out there who wants to talk to me about that, please come to the center. Come and talk to me.
Okay.
Fantastic. So along the lines of, you know, winter and holiday gear, we wanted to talk to you about some of the upcoming waste stream items that we'll see during the holidays. One of the things people are probably finding at this time of year is old strands of Christmas lights that no longer work. Now, with our guest on the show last week, Adam Minter,
right.
We actually discussed that there is, you know, a market for these old Christmas trees. And I think he said they're selling, or not Christmas trees, Christmas lights, selling for, you know, 50 cents a pound on the market. But we want to know, you know, can we bring our Christmas lights to Recycle Utah?
Yes, you can. So we have a daily e-waste collection that's electronic waste. And that means anything basically that plugs in. Now, an old toaster, no. But the new finagled ones with all the buttons on them, yes.
Okay.
So anything that has a circuit board in it, anything that has that basically plugs in, come and talk to us about it. If it is a 450-pound large projection television, there is some nasty stuff in there, right. And yes, you can get rid of that. For residents, the options are it's free at the landfill. They accept your televisions there. When you come to Recycle Utah, we will ask you for a donation of $5 or $10 or $15. When I have three of my guys trying to get one of those out of the car, please believe me, they weigh a lot.
Yeah.
As you
yeah.
well know, because you stuck it in there. So again, it's a daily service we deliver. And that is something that the county is adamant about. Please get the electronic waste out of the landfill. Now, statewide, I had a senator question me in a Senate hearing, how are you going to prevent me from sticking my television into my garbage can? And I just sort of looked at her and said, did you really say that? But she did, and she meant it. And I cannot prevent you from sticking your television in right. your garbage can, but please don't. You have free options at the landfill. You can also go to Best Buy and drop off one item per day. The details of all this are on our website. Look it up, e-waste. It's on the left-hand side, little tab. And there are the options. Many options exist. But when it comes to Christmas tree lights, you're right. Yes. I would encourage you, if you need those lights, and remember Christmas trees are a German thing, and we actually put candles on them. But then I talked to Paul about that, and he doesn't like the idea of real candles on Christmas trees.
Yeah.
The fire department would be busy.
Yes, yes, he doesn't like that at all. So off you go with your little strings that you struggle with every year.
Right.
And then they break, and yes, you can bring them to us. And as far as the value is concerned, we pay 50 cents per pound for anything that we deliver to MedTech. MedTech is an E-Steward certified company that deals with our electronic waste. To get, as you well know, the E-Steward certification, it's a long process. It costs money. And I would say that we happily pay just
really?
To know that it is going into the proper hands and it is not ending up in what I call the Asian market. I don't want to be any more specific than that. You can look up MedTech's E-Steward certification on their website and certainly on ours. There are links. I think electronic waste is something that we have, and we need to make sure that our residents have an option to get rid of it properly. Commercial entities is a different matter. That is a business expense. If you please talk to me, I give you all the contacts. There are various options. I would encourage hotels and large property owners to, and HOAs to gather their stuff, ask for options. Come, I'll work with anybody. Please, it is your responsibility to get rid of it properly.
Okay, so now I have a couple of other holiday items that I'm wondering about. We produce a ton of waste during the holiday season.
It is the season of packaging.
I read that we create 25% more waste during the holidays. But there are some odd, you know, odds and ends. Like, what if somebody has like a fake Christmas tree or a garland that's broken and they're done with it? Does that have to go in the trash? Is there any way to recycle those things?
No, there is no way to recycle an artificial Christmas tree.
Okay.
So
good to know when you think about buying one.
If you choose to have a Christmas tree in your family, I wish you would choose a real one. There mm-hmm. are pros and cons with every mm-hmm. bit of it. The garlands are my personal favorite. Please, do you really need those darn things? But, you know, you could argue that the real Christmas tree farms grow on soil that otherwise would not necessarily grow anything else. Yes, they use chemicals, I'm sure, but you know they do produce oxygen for us to breathe while they're growing.
It's
a form
local.
Of agriculture.
Plus,
yeah.
they smell a whole lot better
economy.
In your house. There is nothing good about an artificial Christmas tree. However, if you have one, I expect you to keep it for 100 years.
Yeah.
Pass it on.
That was
that's
the idea.
Maybe there's an antique value to it. I don't know. So there you go.
There you go.
Okay, that's good. But that's great to know about the Christmas trees because it is a debate. I think people think, oh, should I cut one down every year? Or should I get one of these fake ones? Okay, so other things that we run into during the holiday season, probably a lot of gift wrap, a lot of glass bottles, a lot of corks.
Yes.
What about those things?
Any kind of glass is recyclable at Recycle Utah, and it needs to be brought to us just to put this to rest. Everybody wants more bins throughout the county. That is not reasonable. Why? Because glass cuts. Glass is dangerous. And glass, any kind of open-top bin, whether it's a 20-yard or a 30-yard, turns into a garbage can. Glass needs to be brought to a facility in Utah, and it needs to be cleanish. Mm. So if you have the beer bottles, only the brown beer bottles go into the glass bin, not the little case that it comes in. That's paperboard.
Okay.
So glass, any of the four colors, any day of the week, 24/7, you can drop it off at the center.
And do they have to be sorted? Do they have to be?
They have to be sorted according to color. So there is a brown bin. Hmm. Brown is a huge challenge. Brown is actually called amber. Huge challenge. It's a totally different animal than the clear and green. Hmm. Clear and green is turned into fiberglass insulation.
Okay.
Is fiberglass good? That's a different discussion. The blue is actually turned into terrazzo tiles and countertops by Heritage Glass. And the fantastic thing about our glass collection is it all stays within the state of Utah and provides jobs. It stays right here. The fiberglass is made right here. the terrazzo tiles are made right here.
Right here. But brown, what is done with brown glass?
Brown can be used a little bit for the fiberglass, not very much, but for sandblasting.
Okay.
That's, you know,
so industrial uses or so.
Industrial uses. Okay. Now, when it comes to packaging, the easy thing, just remember, paper. If it tears, it's paper. It can go into a mixed paper recycling bin. If you have that metal-y looking kind of a stuff, ask yourself, do you really need that? Don't buy it. It's not recyclable. It's a piece of garbage. If you have bows and ribbons, they're also essentially a piece of garbage. Do not mix them with your paper, not in your curbside bin and not in our bin. At the center, we will have separate boxes for bows and ribbons. And yes, believe it or not, we sort them.
Wow.
It's a labor of love.
It is.
And then in the past few years, we have gone to the hospital down in Salt Lake and wrapped Christmas gifts and used our bows and arrows. I'm not sure we're going to do this year, but I understand they're already wrapped. So whatever you bring this season, please look for the boxes. They're out there. You know, we've gotten lots of blue Hanukkah bows, so please keep it going. Change to red or gold or whatever. And the boxes, paperboard, corrugated cardboard, it's all recyclable. It can go into your curbside bin, any of it.
But what about cork corks and plastic corks?
Another labor of love. We accept them all and we sort them. So they're plastic corks, they're real corks coming from the cork tree, and then there are the corks that have the wooden or plastic or glass top. The corks with the top are turned into art projects by our local schools, and every now and then I have folks come that say, as I did yesterday, there was a woman there from the NAC, and I said, this is a little Christmas tree ornament, this is a little guy that has little hands and feet, and, you know, we can do things with that. Yes, every cork you bring to us will be recycled, sorted first, and then recycled. The real corks go to California, and there's a company that turns them into the bottoms of shoes. So in the summer, those awesome shoes you have, that's probably a wine cork.
Really?
Fantastic.
Yes. And then plastic corks, of course, can go, and we see more and more of them. They can be sorted out with our caps and be recycled via our usual recycling stream. That's plastic.
Recycling possibilities for practically everything during the holidays, except maybe fruitcake. You guys don't accept fruitcake.
Is fruitcake?
You know what? My guys are so hungry. If you bring us fruitcake,
you know
we'll eat them.
All right. I think you're going to see
some
fruitcake.
This is not an invitation to drop off 100 fruitcakes, please.
All right.
So one more thing when it comes to packaging quickly. We are going to be at the Holiday Bazaar as we were at St. Mary's as well. And we're going to be out there with our new Park City Summit County bag, which is quite it was a lengthy attempt at coming up with something that all governmental agencies agreed on. It's an organic cotton bag. It has a tag on it that says, "We are above plastic." So we're above plastic because plastic bags, when thrown into your curbside bin, have a difficult time getting recycled. They gum up the sorting lines. If you have them, make sure at the store where they have the bins and say, put the plastic bins in here. They will most likely go to California, and if they do, that's a good thing because in California they will be recycled. If you bring them to us, they will also be recycled. Keep them out of your curbside bins. They really present a challenge. They need to be handled separately, and we can do that. The bag, the Summit County Park City bag, is an attempt to get rid of plastic altogether, and that would be way better.
Fantastic.
Admirable goal. Super.
So, Insa, in our last, you know, 1 or 2 minutes with you, I want you to mention one of the things we talked about before the show. We were talking about how can these things be recycled and where can they go? And you said, well, we should be avoiding creating this issue in the first place.
It would be so much better if you just, for example, not accept plastic bags. It's so easy. So we have the, you know, everybody has enough bags in their car, and those are the 99-cent variety that are difficult to wash, and if you wash them three times, they're most likely disintegrating, and then they become a piece of garbage. So the woven ones, the plastic-coated ones, that's a piece of garbage. They're not recyclable. And folks say, well, but they have the recycling logo on there. And I say, that does not mean that they are recyclable. There's a huge difference. So if it is a number four, it's most likely a thin plastic bag. And while people say, well, I use them for dog poop, I use them, it's all great. Avoid the over-packaging for Christmas. Avoid plastic. Avoid throwing anything away, because in a recycling center such as ours, which is rather, you know, small and funky, it is very much geared toward the waste streams that we see here in Park City, which is why we do skis, which is why we do all those little things, including EPS, which is the white packing foam. That's another labor of love. Why we continue to accept it. My guys do not look at it pleasantly, but we do. And we have, as of Cyber Monday, seen an awful lot of these huge, big boxes of packaging in not corrugated cardboard, but it's corrugated cardboard covered in white, blue, that kind of, I don't want to mention names, but why does it have to be a white box? Because if you make it a white box, it becomes very difficult to recycle.
Yikes. Okay.
Yeah. Think about it, folks. There's always a better option. Fabric. I love the Japanese way of gift wrapping, which is nothing but fabric that is tied twice. So all of my friends usually get their gifts in in tea towels and in towels, which are infinitely reusable.
Perfect.
Well, unfortunately, we have to wrap up, and so we could talk to you all day about the number of products that you accept. But thank you so much for joining us today. That was Insa Lupin with Recycle Utah.
Thanks for the bags.
And I'm sure we'll be stopping by after the holidays.
Oh, please do. Any
I have
day.
Lots. Yeah,
any
I
day.
Several fruitcake I need to drop off. All right, we're going to take a quick break for some underwriters, and we'll be back to start to wrap up.
That's right.
It's This Green Earth. Stay tuned.
Thank you, guys.
Park City Restore is grateful for the many hands that have made it successful. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available locally through Habitat for Humanity. Plus, volunteering at the Restore gives you a first look at the amazing treasures donated for resale. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Foothill Oriental Rugs has been an underwriter on KPCW for over 20 years. I'm Jim Weber, owner, rug buyer, and Park City resident. As a direct importer since 1985, from traditional to contemporary to tribal, Foothill Oriental Rugs is Utah's complete rug source. Foothill Oriental Rugs is located 2 miles north of the mouth of the canyon in Salt Lake City at 1460 Foothill Drive.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. For 30 years, we know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. VaultHomeLoans.com. Purchase and refinance mortgages. Conventional FHA and VA. 801-201-3484. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. We want to let you know what's coming up tomorrow on the Public Affairs Hour from 9 to 10 a.m. Wednesday on The Mountain Life, tune in when Lynn and Tim talk with Carl Fisher from Save Our Canyons about an event to be held next week in Park City. It's an effort to bring Parkites an awareness of what's going on with preservation, watershed, transportation, and connection in the canyons of the Wasatch. They'll also be speaking with Roger Burrows, Park City Center for Advanced Professional Studies, Innovative Software Development Instructor, and he'll be in with two students from the school program.
Wow. Good.
Always
good
interesting.
Always a good show. And
let's
of course, thank our underwriters for whom this show would not be possible. They include
Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough.
Republic Services.
Habitat for Humanities Restore.
Rocky Mountain Power.
San Francisco Design.
And Prudential Utah Real Estate.
Also, join us on Facebook at KPCW This Green Earth.
Hey, remember, this is KPCW 91.9 FM, Park City.
Only in Park City, only on KPCW.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.